When the owners of a home are renovating their barn to make into an apartment, they unearth the true story of what happened when the prior owner's wife went missing over 25 years prior. This is the story of Elizabeth Heath. Hey there, and welcome to Valkyrie, your podcast for true crime stories. I'm your host, Dee. Today we travel to Newtown, Connecticut. Now, this small town is known for one very horrible, brutal mass shooting, one I hope that will never, ever be recreated anywhere. But we're not here to talk about that one, and I never will, as personally it's still too very fresh in my mind. But today we'll actually discuss another case, one which actually went cold for over 25 years before finding its ending. It's April 6, 1984, and Elizabeth Goff Heath is reported missing by her then-husband. He says that she ran away with her lover to India, taking only a few clothes and stealing about $600 from him, leaving behind their daughter and her dogs. Fast forward to almost exactly 26 years later. The home of Elizabeth and her then-husband, John Heath, has since been sold to new owners. It's April 13th, 2010, and Jordan Wright, who is the son of the new owners, is ripping up the floor in the old barn, which was previously converted to some living space, but was being updated to be converted into an apartment. He finds a hatch of what he thought led to a drainage tank, but what he finds in it are trash bags, a mattress pad, and some bed sheets and a pillow. Inside the bed sheets were the remains of Elizabeth Heath, who was wrapped tightly in that bedding, apparently placed in headfirst into this hole with a bag covering her skull. Now, like I said, Elizabeth was reported missing since April of 1984, so almost exactly 26 years later. She was 30 years old at the time when her husband, John Heath, had reported her missing. Now, this was also just 9 days after her husband had filed for divorce and she had been served that paperwork. Now, the story her husband told was that Elizabeth had stolen $600 in cash and ran away to India with her boyfriend, abandoning him and their daughter, Megan, who was just about 5 years old at the time. Now, one claim was that John wanted more kids, but Elizabeth didn't, and that is what actually prompted her to abandon her family. You see, Elizabeth was somewhat of an overweight woman who loved to train dogs and compete in dog shows. She was described as an earthy and kind of hippie type at the time. Now, she had lost a good amount of weight before her disappearance and started making new friends and even had started pursuing a degree in family therapy. My guess is this probably prompted some feelings of jealousy from her husband, who made up the story about her running away to cover up the story of what really happened that day. Right after Elizabeth had disappeared, her husband had called her brother, asking if he had seen her recently because he thought she had run away. Apparently, this was a trend for Elizabeth's family, and a few family members were kind of known for running away for a few days or weeks and then returning, so this was like a family trend. And her brother had known that family history and said if she really had run away, don't worry, she'll be back in a few days, because that's just what they did. But the claims was that Elizabeth had gotten up in the middle of the night and snuck out, allegedly going into her daughter's room to even say goodbye to Megan. Now, the police investigate the missing person claims that John ultimately files, but they find no trace of Elizabeth. Until about 3 weeks later, after her disappearance, they receive a call from John's mother, Elizabeth's mother-in-law, saying that she had actually seen Elizabeth sitting in the family driveway. She said she didn't talk to her, and she was confident that it was in fact Elizabeth in this car, but she says that when Elizabeth saw her sitting there, she quickly drove away, and that was the end of this. 4 months later, when Elizabeth had not yet returned, John proceeded with the divorce as he had previously begun. Like I said, it had been 9 days since before her disappearance that she was actually served the paperwork for this divorce. He at that point had begun a relationship with Raquel Figueroa, who was a family friend who was very close with their daughter, Megan. And some reports even say that she was, in fact, the babysitter or nanny. I don't know if this is just another case of the husband running away with a nanny. But, you know, what they say is that the hand that rocks the cradle is the one that rules the world. Right. But this is within, you know, 4 months later, he's now moving on, starting this new relationship. And within 6 months, he actually proposes to Raquel, although oddly enough, at 4 months, she was actually added to the deed of the Heath's home. So, like, my wife just disappeared 4 months ago. I'm going to add this new woman to the deed of my house. I'm going to marry her a few months later. Life is great. Nobody knows what happened to my wife. Life is great, right? Now, back to 2010, when the police are excavating the remains found in the basement of the home previously owned by John Heath. He'd apparently lost the home that he had worked so hard on to foreclosure when he had fell on some hard financial times in 2005. After that, he moved to Bridgewater, Connecticut. Now, John had built this home, and he claimed to have loved it so much that he insisted on even a backyard wedding at his home because he had helped build and maintain and renovate everything that was on that property, including the barn where his ex-wife's remains are actually found. The bones found in a dry well in the barn were pieced together, documenting the bedding that the body had been wrapped in and even the pillowcase that had also been found amongst the body. They are able to confirm that the bones do in fact belong to Elizabeth by dental records, but because they're only bones that are left here, there's no DNA. There's nothing that's underneath there. Fingernails, nothing. This is really just the skeleton that's remaining at all this point. What they can see is that there are multiple fractures to her skull. They can tell that she has some shoulder injuries and that her jaw was in fact completely broken. Now, the shoulder injury they found, they say that that could only have come from a very, very strong blow, and that there's evidence from what appears to be defensive wounds to the forearms because they can see that they had been broken as if kind of like attempting to block an attack, and that they determined that the ultimate cause of death was blunt force trauma. Now, the medical examiner autopsy indicates that Miss Heath was bludgeoned to death with a long, slender object. Although they couldn't really confirm exactly what this object was, there wasn't anything found amongst her that they can say definitely is what caused this. So they can't really say exactly what this long, slender object was, but that's what they determined was, in fact, the cause of death. The news story was no longer that Elizabeth had stolen $600 and ran out on her husband and abandoned her daughter and dogs that she loved, raised, and showed, but perhaps that John had filed for a divorce, potentially because he was already having an affair, and had realized that he might have to actually pay child support, potentially lose custody of his child, and even pay alimony to Elizabeth. She wasn't working. She was a housewife, right? So alimony was a thing, right? They believe this rationalization potentially made him snap. From the reports I read, he did seem like a controlling man with known anger issues who was also somewhat obsessed with money. So potentially the thought of alimony plus child support may be the cause of his, you know, what have been the cause of this fight, or maybe caused him to snap. And I don't think we'll ever really know what really caused the fight that night. As the police went to see John Heath to question him about the remains found in his prior home and his missing wife. Now, keep in mind, again, it's 25 plus years later. He's now in his late 60s, living on oxygen and still with his wife, Raquel, who adds in as they come in there that he has some significant memory loss due to PTSD and depression, and he apparently also has COPD. Raquel chimes in a few times during this questioning, apparently not really having much nice things to say about Elizabeth, and she's sitting there like, no, she definitely ran away. There's no doubt in my mind. She definitely ran away. John, of course, reiterates his story from the start. She ran away with a guy that she was talking to who would always talk about how he wanted to go to India, so that's why he believes that she is there. And that's who he believes that she is with. But he also has to chime in with a bunch of negative comments about Elizabeth, even to the point stating that she was a horrible mother, which is why they had the need for Raquel to always babysit for Megan. So now the investigators are going through this going, well, was Raquel actually involved? I don't know. Now they start asking John about his home. Miraculously, he recalls exact dimensions and distances from the home to the barn, even with his alleged failing memory. He almost seems excited to talk about this prior home. Now, like I said, he had a lot of hand in building and maintaining and renovating this home. He loved this home, is what everyone said. But oddly enough, as he is able to go into detail about the barn specifically, he doesn't know anything about this dry well that's in the barn when they start asking him about this hole in the ground. How convenient, right? As they get to the part of this dry well, suddenly the very clear descriptions of this barn and the very eloquent speak that this man is having about everything from knowing the dimensions and other items. As soon as they get to the dry well about this in the barn, in the big hole, he starts to stop and stutter quite a bit. Even's like, huh? What do you mean about that? I don't know anything about that. I don't know anything about that. He even comments, I know where the drain goes out, but he knows nothing about this giant cement covered hole that's in the middle of the barn. Now Raquel starts kind of recognizing that, wait a second, he just kind of changed his demeanor slightly here. And she starts to ask more questions, like, what is a dry well? Where exactly in the barn was it? How does that work? And she almost starts questioning John, too. Like, how could you not know about this? Again, he was just sitting there saying very specific things about the barn, but I don't recognize the giant hole there. And when they add in the fact that they found some bones in the barn, in this hole, the couples start to show two very different reactions. John remains calm and unwavering, and Raquel becomes shocked and emotional, saying, They're not Elizabeth's, though. They can't be Elizabeth's. They can't be. Elizabeth left. Don't say that. The investigators recall Raquel's personality just prior to this realization and feel, but based on this reaction, that she really didn't know. Raquel even adds that, so you're telling me that the people who said that they saw Elizabeth, that means that they lied? And John just tells her to chill out. Like, so really, come on. He knew. When they say her forearm appeared to be broken and smashed, John reacts to this by bringing his hands into the air and smashing them down on the table and saying, so a smash with a, and then he stops himself before he goes any further. He then adds that, I wouldn't do something on that property that was not proper. Yeah, sure, John, sure. Was he just reliving this from his actions as he slammed his hands into the table of what he did that night? Maybe, I don't know. But John now switches it up. He says he knows who killed her and dumped her body in that hole. And it wasn't John, but in fact, his father. His father was known for being an abuser who had a history of sexually abusing children. And he really didn't like Elizabeth. And John added that she was probably going to go to the police about him. So maybe that's why he killed her. His father is dead at this point. So they can't even go question him. And they really can't even prove it, right? But the investigators, they don't really buy it. They think this is just another play. So how do they prove, in fact, it was John? Like I said, there's no DNA. There's no evidence under the fingernails, nothing. So they start to ask a few family and friends for pictures of Elizabeth and John and hope that maybe something will trigger a lead. And in fact, one does. They find a picture of Elizabeth and John holding baby Megan sitting on their bed. And in that picture, you can clearly see the bedspread and the pillows on that bed, which happened to match exactly to what was found in the hole wrapping Elizabeth up. So it's obvious that whoever did this had access to the master bedroom. In fact, John had always said that the night that Elizabeth disappeared, that they had slept together in their bed and even made love. Yeah, okay. But hey, you know, let's go with it. So is this the comforter that you slept under that night, guy? I don't know. Is this enough to convict him? I don't know. I don't think so, but let's just go back. They execute a search warrant on John's new home and they find one thing that might be a link. They find the matching pillowcase to what was found in the hole. Now, again, this is all circumstantial. And who has a pillowcase from over 25 years ago? Okay. I probably do. And I can be sure that my parents actually have bedding that's over 25 years old. But let's set this case up. The bones are found wrapped in bedding and confirmed to be in the home at the time. The main suspect has the matching pair of the pillowcase found in his home. Now, that's not enough. Even if that was true, that the father actually did the killing, he could potentially have had access to this bedding, right? But I don't know. If that was true, why would John go so far to be like, no, she definitely ran away? Why would he say that she stole $600, oddly specific? And why would he insist that she snuck into their daughter's room and said goodbye? She obviously didn't do that if she was brutally murdered and then buried in the backyard, right? So John is arrested when the police are alerted that he now has a moving truck at his house and they're packing their stuff up ready to go. So they had to arrest him before he had the chance to run. He's arrested and his bail is set at $1 million. That seems really high to me, but I don't know. Apparently this dude had money because this property that he had was pretty significant. Although it does say that he went into foreclosure, right? So, but still $1 million, he said it. John was tried, and although being brought into the courtroom in a wheelchair and also on oxygen, the defense, of course, has to paint him as this frail man with failing health who has had such a hard upbringing because of his father, who was really known for this abuse. They even added that his father was supposedly living in the barn at the time of the murder, so Elizabeth must have gone out to say goodbye to him, and that's when he killed her and buried her in the hole. I guess offering an alternative option as a defense isn't a bad idea here in theory, but again, Where did the other stories come from about the $600 and the lover and all this other stuff, right? So again, I think he sunk his own hole. Now, Megan Heath Hawes, who was the sole defense witness at this murder trial, she was there to support her father. She describes her father as a softy, a gentle patriarch who would kneel down in the dirt beside her, planting in the garden every spring and picking the vegetables from the vine every summer. And she would go in there and say that he was a very strong proponent of karma and the golden rule. I guess this is true. You know, it comes back around, right? After 3 weeks of testimony, John was found guilty of murder and sentenced to 50 years in prison. Mr. Heath showed no reaction to the sentence or to the verdict, And at this point, anything was a life sentence for this man. Although people had expressed a hope that maybe they would only impose the minimum of 25 years versus 50. I think the maximum was 60. They gave him 50. Either way, it wouldn't really matter. John would ultimately die in prison in October of 2015 at the age of 72. Now, Megan, she would write a letter to the court, and it would say, quote, "I am truly devastated by the death of my mother." And she would add in that she is grateful to know that her mother did not, in fact, abandon her, as had been claimed by her father, but she still doesn't believe that her father had actually killed her mother. Now, that ends the case of John and Elizabeth Heath. To learn more about this case, I suggest watching the show Buried in the Backyard, which covered this case in season 2. I got a lot of information from that, along with various news articles about this and the trial and the case here. So what do you think? If you like this podcast, please remember to follow us and subscribe. You can find us on Instagram at Valkyrie_truecrime, or you can find us on TikTok at Valkyrie Podcast, one word. Our website with show information is valkyriepodcast.buzzsprout.com. Look forward to hearing you on the next one. Bye.